Welcome to the HCI family of podcasts. We're your source for personal, professional, and organizational growth and development. We share our own original research, explore industry trends, and interview executives and thought leaders from across the globe. Join us for practitioner-oriented content around all things leadership, HR, talent management, organizational development, and change management. Maximize your personal and organizational potential with the HCI family of podcasts. Oren Davis, welcome back to the podcast.
Thanks, Jonathan. Always a pleasure.
It is a pleasure to be with you again. Longtime listeners will recognize Oren, who's joined me at least two times, maybe three times over the last few years. We've gotten to know each other, and it's been great to interact with you. And today we're going to be talking about the shifting nature of performance management. Certainly things have been changing in recent decades and in recent years around kind of best practice, what works, what doesn't work. And our experience has been pretty uniformly that most organizations are lagging in adjusting their practices to better suit, you know, the real needs and the gaps that they may be facing around performance within the organizations. So we're going to unpack all of that and try to explore that together today. As we get started, I wanted to share Oren's bio with everybody. Oren Davis earned the first doctorate in positive psychology and is a self-actualization engineer who enables people to do and be their best. He consults for companies from startups to multinationals on hiring strategies, culture, innovation, diversity, equity, inclusion, and employee well-being, and coaches people at all levels on building self-knowledge and developing personal and professional growth strategies. As the principal investigator of the Quality of Life Laboratory, he conducts research on flow, creativity, hypnosis, and mentoring. Dr. Davis teaches business at Columbia University and gives workshops and lectures globally about human capital, creativity, and innovation, and positive psychology. He is a startup advisor who helps early stage companies enhance their value propositions, pitches, culture, and human capital, and writes and speaks avidly about human capital, creativity, and innovation, and positive psychology. And that's really a brief introduction, Oren. Anything you would like to highlight by way of your background or personal context before we dive on in further?
Among other things, I've been doing a lot of work with companies, especially a lot of startups lately, on how they do their hiring and looking at how we can do more with D&I, diversity and inclusion, because we've got a backlash against it. We're now trying to, you know, push back against that backlash because it really has got a lot of important principles that we need to be following. So I'm trying to be at the cutting edge of that and doing some new work on that and possibly even ways of measuring diversity and inclusion.
Yeah, excellent. Excellent. And, you know, in the pre-interview we were chatting, thinking maybe we would focus on the hiring piece. We decided to focus on the performance management piece. But they really are part of the same thing, right?
It
all goes together. And, you know, some of what I'm thinking is, you know, the book and then the movie Moneyball. For anyone who's seen that, or if you've seen that recently, I love that movie just in and of itself. It's a great movie. There's a reason why it was a Best Picture nominee. It was just a really great movie. But from a HR and people management perspective, there are just so many great things there. And part of it comes back to really this, the nature of, like, do you know what you need on your team? That feeds into your recruitment, into your hiring practices, your onboarding, your performance management, et cetera, et cetera. It feeds into all of it. And
Definitely.
So after that movie came out, it started to popularize. You started to see more and more people talk about the Moneyball approach to HR or to performance management or to hiring and such. And I'm just highlighting that now. I know that was over a decade ago, but I'm highlighting that now because it's still relevant. Like, we need to know what we need in a given position, in a given role. We need to know how this person is going to be able to help the team. That feeds into our hiring. That 100% should feed into our performance management process, whatever that looks like. And it's only once we have clear objectives and metrics, and then we measure them, that then we can do meaningful performance management. So anyways, I just wanted to kind of draw that connection, because sometimes we think of these as completely separate things. And while they are unique, you know, domains within the HR function, they heavily rely on one another.
Absolutely. Actually, when I'm talking to clients about setting up their hiring practices, like one of the things I do is I work with a lot of startups on how to hire. You know, they close the seed round of Series A, they don't know how to hire. One of the things I actually ask them to do is come up with the performance review for the person they're trying to hire. I actually tell them, like, start there. Because you need to know, like, what kinds of outcomes are you going to want to measure out of this job before you actually even begin to hire them? Like, what do you need? And that actually helps you figure out what you need. And in a very real sense, the performance management process is, are we getting what we need out of this person?
And a lot of times we are great. We're going to try to help grow this person, develop them further, stretch them so they're ready for the next opportunity. In some cases, we're not. Either they're subpar or they're just kind of barely meeting where we want them to be, and we really want them to grow into their role. So let's dive in and really talk about that. How do we, maybe we can start with kind of the traditional model, like what organizations have been doing for the last several decades. And why that's insufficient, and why we've started to see, more and more organizations adopting a shift.
Yes, I mean, the first thing I think we're seeing is that, people are moving away from that whole once a year thing. But, in the past, it was, you get a once a year thing, are you on Santa's nice list or are you on Santa's naughty list? And are you going to get a raise or not a raise or a promotion or not a promotion? We're figuring that out once a year in a world that's incredibly dynamic, in a world where things are changing all the time, jobs are changing all the time. And so, like, how do you know at the end of 1 year you're doing this, brand evaluation? I'm not saying that's a bad idea, but when we're doing only that and that thing by itself, it's not very useful. Also, it's not really coaching. It's more of a checkpoint, it's more of an evaluation. And so it's sort of like if you need people to grow, it's just sort of like this is not going to help you grow. You don't really know what's going on. And trying to explain what's happened all over the past year, many managers don't really keep track. So there's a big recency bias in annual reviews. So they're really, when you get your annual review, it's really just like the last 3 months and the 9 months before that don't even matter. So this obviously has needed to go. Most companies know that, but I think that a lot of folks are still stuck on, well, we need a way to know how to fire people. Everybody's very concerned with, the CYA of firing people. Or of layoffs, and they're using performance management as that background for the CYA thing. And that's CYA here being cover your actions. And that's not really the way to do performance management. If we want to manage performance, we really need to talk about how we're improving performance, focusing really on coaching instead of on evaluating. And like basically, if you're doing performance management correctly, nobody should be getting fired on the basis of performance management systems.
Oftentimes, what performance management has been, like you said, it's a way to cover your butt. It's a way to kind of post hoc justify why you're getting rid of somebody. But it's also a huge problem from an employment law litigation standpoint. So often, what you see in performance management documentation doesn't even line up, right? Like someone who's gotten like multiple years in a row of like exceeds expectations, and then you're trying to claim you let go of them for performance issues, right? And so, while I think it's been a checkbox largely for a lot of organizations from a compliance standpoint, from a rightful termination standpoint, et cetera, it actually has hurt many organizations because it doesn't actually line up. So on that basis, once a year, performance appraisals just don't work. I've heard the argument, well, is it better than nothing? And I don't know. Like maybe it is better than nothing, but I'm not sure it is better than nothing. I'm thinking right now, my own personal experience as a professor, I'm at an institution and we have performance management that still functions in the form of annual performance reviews. So we have our normal, like for tenure track faculty, you have your third year review, your tenure review, full professor review, but in between we have annual reviews as well. Maybe that's better than not having anything on an annual basis,
No, it's not. And the cobbler's children are going barefoot.
but I think for the most part it doesn't, because it gives this facade of like we are being attentive to the needs of our people. We are coaching based on performance. We're training based on performance. We're making hiring decisions based on performance, blah, blah, blah. Like we make all these assumptions about these annual performance reviews, to justify them and to say how valid they are. But are they actually better than doing nothing? Oftentimes, I think the answer is no. And I think we're actually hurting ourselves because we have this false sense of security that, oh, we do performance management. We have a system. That means we're on the right track. But I can tell you, not to throw my university under the bus, but our performance, well, I guess I will throw my university under the bus.
You can
We're a
throw
bit
any
of, it's a,
university under the bus like this. They almost all do the same thing.
The performance management system for faculty, it's a joke. The timeline's a joke, the process is a joke, the value of it and like what we get out of it is a joke. And I say that as a department chair, one of my duties is to do these performance reviews for my faculty. So I do what the university requires me to do in terms of the annual performance appraisal, but I know full well it's a joke. It doesn't work as it is. And so as a department chair, what that means for me is I proactively have to, on my own, go above and beyond, to do something meaningful. I have to go above and beyond what the expectation is. I have monthly one-on-ones with each faculty member in the department. We talk about goals, we talk about growth, we talk about, all the different things they need support with. And that becomes a more real-time, dynamic way to provide mentoring, coaching, feedback, to help address performance issues when they arise, as they arise, and not wait, for the some arbitrary end of the calendar year or end of the academic year or the fiscal year or whatever to try to address something that may have been an issue for a really long time, right?
Absolutely. And so you bring up two really important things there. One of them, the second one here, is actually the idea that when there are performance management issues, what we end up doing most of the time is we tell people, don't do that, or that was bad. And you're not telling people what you want them to do. And so one of the biggest changes we need to see in performance management is we need to tell people, do this instead of this. You need to tell people what you want them to do instead of just saying, like, this is like you did this, this was bad, you were getting reprimanded for this, and so on, or stop doing that thing. You need to think in advance, what do you want instead? And what I find a lot of people are doing is they're saying, well, I know what outcome I want. Now you figure out how to get that outcome. And that's presuming that the outcome that they're looking for is reasonable. So no, you actually have to talk to people about the how they get the outcome. I mean, yes, at the end of the day, there's a certain outcome that needs to happen. But if you don't like how they're going about getting that outcome, then you need to say, instead of doing what you're doing, you need to do this thing to get this outcome. But the weird part is sometimes that means you're changing someone's job. And a lot of people aren't thinking about the fact that when they do that, they're changing the nature of someone's job. This is not necessarily what they agreed to or what they signed up for. And people need to be patient with that. I mean, yes, jobs are changing. We're in a much more uncertain world. It's that whole VUCA thing that everybody's, throwing around, volatile, uncertain, chaotic, and so on. Right? That in that world, your job can change, and suddenly, what you sign up for is not necessarily what's needed. Okay, you can adapt, but you're not necessarily going to adapt immediately. Performance management needs to keep that in mind. People don't adapt immediately. They're like, people say things like, oh, we'll give you a week or two to change on this. Nobody's changing in a week or two like this. It's insane. That's.
Only the most surface level things, right? Like you have someone who, like, if, sorry to use the university example, if I have a faculty member teaching a face-to-face class and they're not showing up to their class, that is something that I can sit down with them and say, this needs to change immediately. And like within a week, you better start showing up to your class or there's going to be consequences. That's fine. Most of the time, when we're talking about performance issues, though, we're not talking about like easy surface level stuff like that. You're talking about ingrained attitude, behavior, interpersonal interactions, all those sorts of things that are, it's built upon a lifetime of experience and how we function in the world. And you're not going to change that on a dime with somebody. They have to change, maybe change their mindset. They have to develop new habits, to develop new patterns, change their approach. That takes time. That takes continual effort, regular coaching, regular feedback, check-ins, etc. You're never going to flip on a dime. You say you have 2 weeks to fix this. No, it's just not going to happen.
Nobody's also performance improvement plans similarly are like they're often, first of all, the timeline of performance improvement plans is way too short. And most of the time when people are getting performance improvement plans, they're I mean, that's just CYA for termination. But there's one other thing you mentioned earlier that I actually want to bring back here, which is that one of the reasons why the normal performance management system is worse than nothing is actually, I'm going to go back to the Moneyball analogy. Often because they're not using the right statistics. And when you're measuring something using the wrong stuff, that's worse than nothing. It's like using personality to figure out whether you should hire somebody. People say it's better than, people say that that's actually useful. The only thing personality is might be better than nothing. But honestly, I can give you a lot of reasons why it isn't, probably a discussion for another day. But also, spoilers to anybody who hasn't seen Moneyball, you might want to turn off right now. But one of the problems with Moneyball that the movie actually shows is that statistics work over a large group of people. And so, yes, statistics work over the season, but a post games, the postseason games and the series, it's seven games, winner take all. And as was demonstrated in the movie, large number models don't necessarily apply to just seven games. And that won't tell you anything. And so when people are trying to take these, large statistical models, oh yeah, it's been largely shown on average, things are like this. When you've got a small sample of people, that doesn't tell you very much. So like when you're looking at statistics about what people are like, and then you're looking at five candidates in your hiring pool, like your five finalists, you have to throw the statistics out the window now. They don't apply to your five finalists. There's only five of them. And similarly, when you're doing like performance management, what the average is, can be, should be, whatever, everybody's different. So that people have this feeling that if they put numbers to something, that then it's defensible. And like, yes, it's a great pretense, but in the reality, wrong numbers are actually worse than indefensible.
It's the faux objectivity, right?
Yep.
Like it gives us this sense of we're being rigorous, we're being objective, impartial. And I'm like, maybe, but you still have to, if you're scoring people on stuff, there's still subjectivity there, there's still bias built in. You make a really great point. In the aggregate, we can make generalizations using large models, large data models, large populations, etc. Once you start to drill down, though, into a small number of people for a particular type of a role, you can be informed by the big data, but you have to start dealing with people person to person. And you can only it, you're really only going to see improvements once you have the You, if you've developed as a manager, if you've developed a relationship of mutual accountability and trust with your team, you have regular check-ins, you have opportunities to have real conversations with people. That's where you find yourself in a position where you can start to influence positive change, whether it's building on existing strengths of a person or addressing, some gaps or areas that they need to work on to improve. If you don't have a basis of and foundation of mutual accountability and trust with your team, it's going to be really hard to get there. And you need to be consistent, and you need to be committed to it over time. And if you can't do that, then it becomes this checkbox thing. It becomes this superficial thing, and it's not actually going to manage performance. It becomes like this procedural activity. It becomes something so you have some documentation to show in case of a court proceeding. It doesn't actually do anything for the people involved, for the manager or for the person who's having their performance appraised.
Yeah, this is something like Goodhart's law that like once you start to measure something, it ceases to be a good measure, something along the, or once you make an outcome contingent upon a measure, it ceases to be a good measure because people game the system. And so like when you have these numerical systems, what people are going to do is game it to get to their numbers. And funnily enough, we were actually talking earlier about the backlash on DEI, and one of the things that with that is that it's that people got too obsessive about the numbers. People start gaming the numbers, and that's not how you do diversity and inclusion, but it's also not how you do performance management. I mean, what I would say is, in general, the numbers have to go. If you care about performance management, you actually want high performance, it's all coaching. It's exactly what you said about what you're doing as a department chair. You want a good department, and as I understand it, you've got a great department, one that's actually, hitting the news quite often. And part of that's because when you're doing performance management, you're coaching people, once a month. That's how you get performance. It's not the numbers, and it's not, holding people to numbers or doing these annual reviews. It's the fact that you're going to have a great group when you're constantly working with everybody, making sure they're growing, making sure that they're getting the feedback that they need. And also, like, again, something that the late Peter Taylor, may rest in peace, he actually had a great system for this. Plus Delta. Here's what's going well. Here's what is great. Keep doing this. This is good. And actually, mention this is good. And then Delta, go from this to this. Start changing some things. Change this thing to that thing. But that's the prep that managers need to do before they walk into the meeting. It's go from this thing to that thing. And I think that that planning is one of the most important things that we need to add to performance management today. Even if you are going to continue doing the annual review, because big companies, they're very slow to change. At least have the managers come in and prep that with what they want to see happen, instead of just don't do that or stop doing that. Change this thing to that thing. Replace this habit with this one, and then actually give people the time to adapt. Human beings were extremely adaptable. Something I find a lot of folks are not taking into account. So assume the adaptation. People can change. And by the way, they can even change when they don't necessarily agree with the change. So if you find yourself in a situation where you got to do certain things to make your job work, we can do that. Even if we don't like those things, even if we don't want to, we can do what we need to do. So, and that's another thing I think people really need to keep in mind. We can do what we need to do, even if it's not what we want to do. We do it all the time.
Well said. Well, Oren, there's so much more we could talk about here, but I note the time. I need to let you go. This will have to be it for today. Before we wrap things up, I wanted to give you a chance to share with the audience how they can connect with you, find out more about your work, and then give us a final word on the topic for today.
Sure. So folks can get in touch with me via the Quality of Life Laboratories. So that's www.qllab.org, QLLAB.org. And almost all my work, my research, my consulting, it's all up there. People can find me there mostly. Occasionally post on my blog on Medium. You can again find the link to that through my website. Got some exciting new stuff coming down the pike this year. Some stuff on flow, some stuff on diversity and inclusion, some stuff on performance management, which will hopefully be showing up later this year. It's very exciting, and looking forward to hearing from folks.
Wonderful. Oren, thank you so much. Oh, go ahead.
I was gonna, yes, for the last word, I was gonna say, like, the key to performance management is really coaching, not defense. Like, you're looking to build, you're not looking to protect.
I love it. That's a great way to end. Thank you so much, Oren. It's been a
Thank
pleasure.
you, Jonathan. Always a pleasure.
I encourage the audience to reach out, get connected, find out more about what Oren can do for you. And as always, I hope everyone can stay healthy and safe, that you can find meaning and purpose at work each and every day. And I hope you all have a great week. Thanks for joining us for this episode of the podcast. We hope you stay healthy and safe, and please join us again soon.